Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 28 of Slamfire Radio. This is your show for October 24th and the week that follows, I guess, or the 25th, whenever I decide to edit this and put it up. I'm not gonna lie, it's probably gonna be a while. Anyway, hi. This is Matthew, the warning shot. Along for the ride, we got Trevor, who's...
Hi, everyone.
There he is. Hey.
And I was wondering how long it was going to take before you would keep going by yourself.
And then Owen there, he's making fun of me. It's not fair, really. I'm at a lower mental game than normal, which puts me about grade 3. Asleep. Yeah.
See, you had a nap?
I came home. I don't do well after I wake up from naps, especially when they're almost 3 hours long, when they were supposed to be like 45 minutes because the stupid alarm clock isn't loud enough. I don't know.
Comas that don't last that long.
I woke up and I didn't even know what day it was. And I didn't fall asleep where I normally fall asleep. And so I also did not know where I was. And I was mostly confused for a little while, and it turns out I still am. So we're going to roll right into Owen and what he's done with guns this week. So, Owen, please, put a bullet in me.
Yeah, well, not too much. I guess the 3-gun, which probably most people have listened to by now, I hope.
I would hope so. That's episode 27B.
Yes,
those
that's
who
right.
Haven't checked that out. That
was kind of short. Well, shortish, whatever.
Episode 27 wasn't, but 27B, yeah.
Only because the smoke detector went off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny.
That's what happens when Trevor cooks.
That's what happens when Trevor leaves his wife in charge of Trevor's cooking.
It's
hey,
funny.
No, I ate several very nice meals that your wife made.
That's true.
So we didn't hear what I said. I said that's what happened when Trevor leaves his wife in charge of what Trevor's cooking.
I heard what you said. Doesn't mean I'm listening.
No, that's she's capable. When, but if it's mine, it's like, oh, whatever.
It doesn't really matter.
He'll eat anything.
Well, we have this water cooler question at work, and they post out these random questions. And this week or yesterday it was 57% of men say that this food reminds them of their wife. And the first answer that was written down was burnt meatloaf.
Wow. I would not want to see that lady.
So, yeah, I may or may not have been in charge of the pen at that moment, but I'm pleading ignorance.
Yeah, so, yeah, the 3-gun, that was awesome. I'm still kind of recovering. But oddly enough, usually after that kind of shooting and mounted shooting, I'm like, okay, I'm good for a while. You know, but not this time. I came home and I was like, I want to go shoot more.
So, that's good.
Yeah. Had a lot of fun. Other than that, I went for a walk tonight with my shotgun, with my new and improved KSG.
Because it now has a rear sight as well as a front sight.
And an optic.
So, bird hunting with a red dot, folks. It works. Yeah. Well, it would work if you'd get the gun up in time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the problem with any sights, right?
Yeah.
No, I saw one grouse streaking through the woods, but...
Ooh, streaking.
Yes, it was.
Lost its feathers? Or?
It saw the look of me and my...
You had all your tactical gear on, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Plus your vest, your orange vest.
And I just had a jacket on, jacket, but... My schmuck all done up, you know, kind of over my face.
Your what? Bless you.
My schmuck.
Okay. I call them a scarf, but, you know, you can call them a schmuck if you want.
Yeah, well, you're kind of a weenie that way.
Says the mall ninja.
Yeah. Hey. I don't know. The way he shot, I don't think he's a mall ninja. He beat you.
Yeah.
Just saying. He did beat me. And what? So what happened, folks, is I shot in a different division because I didn't have optics or compensators on my gun. I shot all iron sights and just straight muzzles. And I came in first in my division, but that's not terribly important. Trevor and Owen were both in the same division, and Owen came in second place behind a person who is very hard to beat anyway. So it was, I likened it to kind of being passed by a Ferrari. It's not really that humiliating because he's really a...
Well, that's a hardcore open shooter.
Yeah, hardcore. And so anyway, I was curious how I stacked up against the other two hosts here, Owen and Trevor. So I said, Trevor, can you put me, my name into the open class and rerun the math just to see where I stack up?
And I hate you for it.
And it turns out Owen beat me by less than 0.5%. So yep. He was like 91 and I was like 80 or 90.5 or whatever the numbers were. It was insanely close.
Just so, and I got,
you know, that's an impressive. Go ahead.
That's it, and that bumped me to fourth.
That's right. So I replied with, of course, well, I'm really glad I shot in my division and not yours. That way you still got your $2.50 plaque.
Thanks for being so considerate.
Which is still pretty impressive that you basically, you know, almost a tie. You shot very, very well considering you didn't have optics or comps or any of that stuff.
Right. Well, we both managed to zero the same stage, and then you kicked butt on a couple of stages, and I kicked butt in a couple of stages, and it just kind of, the math worked out. So,
as it is usually for us in competition, we kind of went back and forth, and yeah. At the end of the day, it really is kind of just a crapshoot on who.
Yeah, twin costs. Right, twin costs. That's how you say that.
Yeah,
not coin toss. Totally twin costs.
Yep. Do it enough, it'll give you calluses on your hand.
What was the one that I did? Mariner?
Yeah.
The Mariner shotgun.
the Mariner.
Yes, the Mariner. It just reminds me of like spaghetti sauce or whatever. I don't know. But so, all Trevor, right. What happened to you? I mean, you were like, usually Owen and I'll kind of trail and kind of sit in your shadow.
What happened to Trevor.
Okay. Thank you, Owen, for letting us know what happened with Trevor.
He used, in my opinion, I think he shot fine with his pistol, maybe a little slow. Some of your shots were very well placed.
Oh, you had some fantastic shots, yeah.
Shotgun, I think you did just fine. I mean, we weren't, but I think your rifle shooting was slower because of the optic you had.
You had a magnified optic, that's right.
Well, it was only 1.5 power, but it still...
It's still not the same as shooting through a red dot, even if it's only one power.
If the cheek weld isn't right, then you don't have all the eye relief you want.
Right.
I changed this. Well, I'll talk about my rifle later, but I changed it for the next one.
Mm-hmm. So you went back with the EOTech?
Oh no!
See, changed the position of the scope.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Like,
so now it comes up faster and a bit more natural.
Yeah, see, several people have been saying to me, well, you know, for the distances we're shooting, we can shoot short-barreled rifles, we can shoot EOTechs, okay? Mm-hmm. So you can get rid of the short-barreled rifle argument, simply because your short-barreled rifle will shoot great at short distances, but it won't shoot well at long distances.
What are you talking about? My short barrel is a 16 MOA, and what more do you need?
Let me finish. If you have a long-barreled rifle, it'll shoot accurately at long distances and short distances. So you're better off with a long-barreled rifle because you can do short distances really well. As well as a short-barreled rifle.
Well, let's do long distances
better than you could with a short-barreled rifle.
Let's do a little bit of semantics here. Now it's my turn. Let's not call it a long-barreled rifle because I'm thinking like 24 inches on an AR. That's a long-barreled me. Let's talk about maybe carbine length or medium barrel length.
Well, I'm talking rifle length, so 18 and up.
Right.
Right. So the same can be said. Well, it was 16. Now it's 18. The same can be said for your optic. An EOTech is great from 100 meters in. A scope can be great from 300 meters in once you get used to it and learn how to use it. And then once I get used to shooting my scope in the proper position and I've only ever shot one match with it, it'll be as good as an EOTech or better because I can extend my range with it. You can't really extend your range with a Neotech unless you put a magnifier on. My scope is so lightweight that if I add a Neotech and a magnifier, I'm going to probably have more weight on top of the gun than my scope alone.
Yeah, that's true, and I will give you that. I still say, though, that a zero or an unlimited eye relief red dot where you're just basically looking through glass with a dot superimposed is still going to be faster than looking through optics, through lenses that bend light, simply because you don't have to have any sort of perfect cheek weld, and you find your dot faster even before your cheek weld's established, and so you can start the aiming process even before you're ready to shoot, which I find speeds up your shooting. Especially now, that being said, you look at the pros, they put micro red dots on top of their scopes or on a 45 on their rifles for that short range shooting, I think, for that
or
reason.
Or even irons.
Yeah, or even irons. But that again, though, you are going to be plenty fast enough with a bit of practice, because I've shot low power scopes with both eyes open quickly like that. And with a bit of practice, you get very good at it. So,
well, you look at what you did last year with the 2-7 power scope.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. And this scope, I wish it was a 1-4. It's not. It's a 1.5-4. And
Sorry, go ahead, Owen.
I was going to say, when you're shooting that, don't you have to close one eye and in order?
Nope.
Really? See, I would think even the half 1.5 magnification would mess that up.
It works the same way when you put like a toilet paper tube up to your eye and put your hand on the end of it. It makes it look like there's a hole in your hand. It's the same thing. Your right eye superimposes that reticle into your field of view, and your left eye just simply sees the rest of it, and you just focus on your shooting eye, and you see that reticle, and you put it on the target, and you shoot. So it works quite well.
And they have
able to do that.
They have got such great eye relief, though. I don't know if you've tried one of these AR three-gun optics. They've got super eye relief where you can put them way out in front, just like you would your Spark or your EOTech or your aimpoint. You pop it up with both eyes open, and the eye relief is there. And instead of looking at a red dot, you're looking at crosshairs.
Yep.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah, it works pretty good.
Well, I know I certainly need to practice at longer ranges. I'm perfectly confident that I can reach out to a couple hundred yards with my gun and my red dot, but it certainly didn't show that at the.
Yeah. Shooting long distances under stress is a lot more challenging than shooting long distances with all the time in the world.
Yeah. And I mean, normally we're shooting at a piece of paper smaller than an IPSC mini target, but the fact that there were IPSC minis messed with people's heads.
I think so.
Yeah.
And it was done on purpose.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. No, I'm totally going to be practicing some of that before next year's match, because I'm sure a stage like that will be included again.
Mm.
So, not to mention that it's good to be able to learn how to shoot quickly at longer ranges anyway. So,
well, I kind of feel bad because I honestly did not think that was going to be a problem, because I've shot my gun at 100 yards and I've grouped it at 100 yards and it shoots well. But I don't know. I don't know what happened. And I got up there and I thought, okay, bang, bang. I made a slight mistake using that barrel as a resting point instead of going prone.
Yep.
That barrel was wobbly.
It was really wide. I realized after the first shot that was a mistake. And I should have at that point just gone prone, and it would have been, I probably would have done better. But I didn't. And that played a part in it. But I still thought
Brian went prone and managed to hit the ground 50 yards before the target. So
yeah, but I wouldn't have been monopodding like he did. So
yeah,
I think I would have been all right. But still, I expected to see a couple in the targets, not six misses.
Yeah, I was.
Did you also have six misses?
I did. Yes.
No, I mean. Owen.
Sorry, Owen. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
I was the first shooter, I think.
I don't remember.
Maybe not. No,
you were
early, though.
You were early.
It was
early,
very early on, though. Yeah.
So, six misses on that stage.
Zeroed it. Yeah, I zeroed it. So did Owen.
Oh,
there
was
a bunch of us zeroed it.
Yeah, yeah, there was. Yeah, that was the one stage that was zeroed the most.
Huh. Yeah. Now, see,
Trevor managed to not zero it, but he zeroed another stage, unfortunately.
Yeah, I zeroed another short stage, the one in front of the camp.
Yeah, the steel one. You managed to basically hit all the penalty targets.
All the penalties, yeah.
Every single one. So,
yeah. Some more than once. Yeah.
Some more than once, yes. Yeah. They were good groups. I mean, when you hit them good, and you were consistently hitting them.
And if, anatomically speaking, if that had been the hostage, they all would have been the shoulder.
Would have been a shoulder shot, and you would have got the bad guy, no problem. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool.
I thought 45 didn't penetrate as much as 9.
Yeah, well, 45.
Oh, you are shooting 9. No, what are you shooting?
No, he was shooting 40.
Oh, 40, yeah.
Yeah. Basically 10 millimeter cut down, so really 9 millimeters, basically all it is.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What else did you do, Owen?
That's it.
So, so Trevor, what did you do?
Well, the next day after the three gun, we made it back out to the range with the boys from Quebec and Ontario to primarily focus on shooting steel, because both of them rarely get a chance to, well, the Quebec guys never get a chance to shoot steel. The Ontario guys rarely do. I think at Bulliver's range, there's no steel allowed, but there is steel allowed in Ontario, unlike the Quebec guys. So we also messed up the boat a little bit more as well.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, we were going to do the field to steel, but the rain started. So what I did was I suggested that we all move into the camp and we set up the man versus man competition, where you have each a plate rack with 5 plates and then a popper with a tab on it. And the tab will indicate which popper falls first.
Now, are these the backwards falling poppers or frontwards falling poppers?
Frontward.
So you shoot yours and then nail your opponent's as soon as he hits it once to try to hold his up?
I guess, yeah. Now he tells me. So, you know, the night before, the conversation was incredibly stimulating, and I was engaged in thoughtful conversation until, 4 a.m. So, needless to say, I was a little tired the next day, and so were a lot of people. And, you know, Owen, you said usually after doing all that shooting, you've had enough, but you didn't. Well, we had. Like, we were just starting to, like, I don't even want to shoot a gun anymore. Let's just put it more. Yeah. So, but we did. We actually stayed on the range until after 12 o'clock, somewhere between 1 and 2. I think. Well, by the time people started to pull out. So, and the Ontario guys were still there when me and the Quebec guys left. So,
wow.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They didn't get home until like 6 in the morning.
Or the 5 Ontario. In the morning or something. The Ontario guys. Yeah. They took off late and it was a long it was a long day for sure. So but we had fun and I got my butt handed to me. I think who did it go down to? It was we had some local guys show up too, and I think Remy Thibault took it. So what else? I worked on both my STI pistol and my STI AR this week. Tonight actually just less than an hour before we started to record, I removed the barrel off my STI and installed the Stag 3G barrel. So going from 16 to 18. And so it's all ready for you, Matthew. I had no problem getting the flash hider off. Or not, sorry, got the comp off.
The comp, yep.
Yeah. Once the barrel, once the upper receiver was in the vice block.
Came off, no problem.
Yeah, it came off, no problem. Well, no problem. But anyway, it's off.
Little,
Took some. I like the top of my workbench needs to be reattached, but we'll get to that in a second.
So basically, I need to plan a trip over to your place in the next couple of weeks so I can get mine swapped out.
Yeah, that'd be cool. It's all downstairs waiting for you. I have all of Officer Frank's tools here. God love him for buying those for us, because we've now used them more than him.
Right. I'll just stop in on my way to Newfoundland. That'll work, right?
Yeah. You going to Newfoundland?
Yeah, I'm going to Newfoundland next week.
Or a wedding or something?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Hey, any listeners in Newfoundland, specifically St. John's, you want to meet up, let me know.
Okay, you got to go to Arms East while you're there.
All right.
Yeah. So,
is it in St. John's?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Oh, well, then I'll go.
Yeah, they're the Stag importer for Canada.
Beauty.
Anyway, I switched my STI pistol back. I took the smaller grip off and put the larger grip back on, and the tuned sear spring. I compared the factory sear spring to the one that was in the gun to see how much it had been tweaked and bent. It was amazing. The problem is you have to know what you're doing, because if you overdo it, then you're going to have hammer fall, right? And the slide's going to go forward, and the hammer's going to follow it, and you're going to get 2 or 3 round bursts before the sear and the disconnector start hanging out together again. So I didn't want to tweak it without a spare, and I decided that, you know, I shot the best match of my life with the gun with the large grip on it, and I found the gun kind of not performing as well since I put the small grip on. So basically, you know, it was a no-brainer. It wasn't broke, so go back to it. and I had it out tonight, and like double taps are almost like bump fires. It's ridiculous. This trigger reset's so short and so light, it should be illegal. It's crazy. Can't believe I said that. So both the gun and the AR got worked on. And then, I don't know if I mentioned this or not before, but I had my Glock 35 for sale on CGN, and there was one kind of lame tire kicker.
Yeah, sorry about that.
One guy just wanted to know where my base pads came from. Yeah, that wasn't you, smart guy.
I know.
And
funnier
anyway,
that way, though.
Yes, it was. I traded my Glock 35 for a Tanfoglio Stock 2. It's bone stock, except for the mainspring's been changed for a lighter mainspring, and I really like it. The gun is really, really heavy. I can't believe how heavy it is. I wish it was a Stock 2. I prefer the Stock 2 because it has that nice bull barrel. And then there's the Stock 3 and the Stock 3 Extreme, and it's got some Eric Graffel parts on it and a barrel with polygonal rifling. Even though this is the factory stock 3 without any aftermarket parts, it's a very, very nice shooting pistol. It's a double action, single action.
Well, it has to be no aftermarket parts, right, if you shoot it in production?
Well, I say aftermarket parts, but you can put factory parts in the gun, right?
Oh, okay. There are aftermarket factory parts you can add. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess aftermarket wouldn't be the correct term, but there are factory upgraded parts for
there
it.
There you go. Okay, I guess that'll work.
Yeah. So anyway, I like it. I like it so much that, of course, I can work on it, so I'm going to probably. I'm going to put just about everything I can on it that is on the Stock 3 Extreme. But, geez, I'm telling you, even as is, it's a serious IPSC production gun and really nice to shoot. The first pull, of course, is double action. So every time I shot it today, I shot the first shot double action because I'm thinking of shooting the match this weekend with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just thinking about it. It provided I have enough ammo and Jody brings me enough mag pouches. It came with a CR Speed holster. So as long as I got the right amount of mag pouches, mags, because it only came with two mags, and ammo, I'm going to shoot a match in production for the first time ever.
Very cool.
Yeah, just for fun. So I really like it. If you're looking for an IPSC gun and you're not sold on the Grand Power yet, which you should be because it's polymer, you might want to check that one out because it's cheaper than a Stock 2. If you like,
I hope you're not talking to me.
I'm talking to anybody who's wanting to step up into the, go from a duty gun in production to
the competition gun in production.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The gun that breaks all the rules legally in production.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's it. I had it out shooting, and you just point it at the steel plates, and they fall before you pull the trigger because they know they're going to get hit anyway. Yeah. So.
Awesome.
Yeah. What about you, Matthew? What did you do?
Well, besides the typical fruitless, that's kind of funny considering what I'm about to say, but fruitless hunting. I've been out with Matt, and there's your problem, as they say. Well, there's your problem. No, I'm just kidding. He and I I think we've actually seen birds. We just haven't actually got shots off on them yet. So I guess the curse is broken. We've seen them. We just need to actually shoot them now. So we'll get her, I'm sure, eventually.
I need to come back.
Yeah, we went back to that same spot actually last time we went hunting. That'd be yesterday, I guess, and we didn't see anything. But it was really overcast and dreary and a little bit windy, so it was we weren't really expecting to see a whole lot anyway. But we were quiet. We didn't talk as loud as we normally do, so I think that might help. But anyway, while at my parents' at Thanksgiving, they have this apple orchard tree thing close by. Which probably explains all the bears they've had there recently. So, Owen, if you want a bear, you could probably go to my parents and get one just by walking around the yard.
Yes, I need to.
They're all over the place.
I haven't filled my tag either.
But anyway, so we're out and we were just grabbing a couple apples off one of the apple trees for a snack or whatever. And well, the local animals have been kind of cleaning up the tree, and there were really no really good ones within arm's reach. Curtis saw one at the top of the tree. And he's like, "Ooh, I want that one." I'm like, "Well, you're not climbing the tree, man. You're going to break it. It's not a heavy-duty tree. You can't just climb this tree without breaking branches." So I was like, just hold on. Pulled my 22 out, and well, pulled it out. I brought my 22 to bear, I suppose, anyway, and just basically shot the stem off the apple.
Better than shooting it off his head.
That's right. I just shot the stem and it fell. Now, those of you who are saying, well, you shot a rifle into the air. Well, I did, but the bullet didn't go any more than 50 yards. In fact, it probably went about 30 yards because there's a huge oak tree right in my line of sight. So the bullet went right into the trunk of that when it went through the stem. So all of you safety naysayers out there can not write in. So
go
it was
ahead,
perfectly
right
safe, but yeah, it was kind of neat. He's like, yeah, right, like you're gonna hit that, pow, apple falls perfectly right down. And like, he's like, oh, nice shot.
He should know better.
So that was kind of fun. That was pretty much all I did, though, just you know, a little bit of hunting and out in the woods with the gun kind of thing. But besides the three gun, I haven't done any real shooting. So but anyway, yeah, I think that wraps up what we've done. T-shirt orders, we're still kind of going on those, so you want a t-shirt, send an email to Trevor, and he'll get you sorted away.
No, he won't.
No, he'll make a mess of things as usual, but we'll still get you a t-shirt somehow. It might even be the size you order.
Yeah, no, yeah, we need to, what we're going to do, folks, is we're going to wait until we have like 10 names on a list, and then we'll say, okay, send us your money and we're going to place the order.
Yep, so send Trevor your name on a list. Just make up your own list, send it to him, and we'll be all set. So, yeah. Okay. Main topic then, guys?
Sure.
Where'd Trevor go? I think I heard his phone ring and then his mic muted, so.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So
just play along, man.
No, it's too late. We did have a guest lined up for this week, but because I dropped the ball and emailed him an hour before the show started, he wasn't able to make it. Apparently, that's not enough notice. I don't know. I guess. Whatever.
What? So,
what's wrong with these people?
How about this? How about when, you know, you're in the middle of the interview and all of a sudden the guest speaks up and goes, yeah, that's my time. We're done. Okay, it wasn't that awkward, but shout out to Brian Bolivar. Brian has crossed the podcasting border and is now a co-host on Modern Rifleman Radio with Ken Kowalski from the Rimfire Podcast. I think it's the only podcast out there that has an American and a Canadian host. It's certainly the only gun podcast that we're aware of. And so they've got this guy on, and dude knows this stuff, and they're talking about the VZ-58 and the CZ-858 and stuff, and it just seemed like out of the blue, he goes, yeah, well, that's my time, guys.
gotta go.
It was one of the most awkward podcasting moments ever. No, I'm just kidding.
And they left it in. That's fantastic. Sounds like my kind of editing.
They didn't have a choice. But so I should have did it at the end, but I'm talking about it now. If you haven't already checked out Modern Rifleman Radio, you know, and you're into modern rifles, get after it. It's a good show.
So that's everything after a Brown Bess? Is that how that goes?
I guess. I don't. Yeah. It's 1022s with plastic kits on it, really, is what it mostly is.
So. Right, but isn't that'd be like the Rimfire Podcast? But I guess Rimfire'd cross over if you're the host of the Rimfire Podcast.
Yeah.
I guess. But anyway, that sounds cool. I like Rimfires, but yeah, it sounds like a good show too. I was almost going to listen to it, and then like Brian's going to be on, so
I don't know now. The other way, I'm like, now the show's worth listening to.
Hey, that's not very nice to Ken.
But it's nicer than you were to Brian.
Well, maybe.
No, of course. Ken knows what he's doing, and he's throwing a little love Brian's way. I hope he's not. Why don't you just take us anywhere?
I did, but we kind of sidetracked. So we're going to talk about hunting this week because it's hunting season, and
we're all,
you know,
so successful.
Okay. So
the three guys you can't see game, let alone shoot it.
We're going to talk about hunting.
Here's what you don't do, folks.
Well, I got a bunch of questions here that we're just going to kind of go through, but I hope we just kind of break off onto different tangents as they occur. But I guess to start off, why don't we talk about what kind of species we have here in Canada that that maybe are unique to Canada, or just that you know, just what we have in Canada, so listeners who are from away kind of know what we have.
Wikipedia moment.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm not wrong, but I was told that we have the largest elk species in Manitoba.
We do? Here in New Brunswick?
Sorry? You said Canada.
I know. I know, that's funny. So here in Canada, we have the largest elk species in, or, oh, okay, but that, I don't know. That's cool, though.
Yeah, I was a bow hunter for a year before I realized we had elk in Canada.
Right?
Yeah. I was.
They were quite south at one, quite far south at one time.
Wait, yeah. Which one is it that's also known as reindeer over on the other side of the world?
Well, we have that's caribou, and there's
caribou. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. We have two species of caribou. We have woodland and
the
Barron's.
One that's on our quarter.
Woodlands caribou and Barron's caribou, or woodlands and anyway, there's two species of caribou, and one of them, the female, has antlers as well as the male.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. Officer Frank used to be a bush pilot, used to take Americans in to hunt them, if you could call it hunting, right? They sit on a ridge and wait for a herd to run by, and then they shoot them.
Yeah.
So
not terribly difficult. So, yeah, we got elk, we got caribou, we got, well, of prong. Course, we've got moose.
Yeah, pronghorn.
Yeah.
White tail. Deer, that would be deer.
Yeah, well, we got muleys, and we got white tails, so we have at least two deer species. We don't have, do we have stag?
There are Arms East, I think, imports those.
Anyhow, so we got a few deer.
Isn't stag just like the name for a male deer?
No. Yes. You've heard of the red stag?
I've also heard of the, yeah.
It's in New Zealand. They've got this crazy rack, this crazy scream. Stag is not just a male white-tailed deer. A stag species is a different kind of deer species. Fallow, we have fallow deer as well.
Yeah.
Out west, fallow deer.
So we got lots of four-legged animals.
Yeah.
I suppose they're all four-legged, aren't they?
Buffalo.
Maybe not the bird, the buffalo. No, we can't hunt buffalo.
Well, there's tourist season, you know.
There is tourist season, yeah. Where do you get a tag for those anyway? I should go into Service New Brunswick and ask. Hey, can I get a tourist tag?
They're on the varmint's license.
They're on the varmint's license. Perfect. Pest control.
two species of brown bear. We've got brown bear, like Kodiaks, and then we've got grizzly bears.
Right, and then, of course, the black bear, which black we have here in New Brunswick, plenty of.
And Victoria Island in British Columbia has the largest species of black bear in the country. There's 600 and 800 pound black bears running around over there. Here in New Brunswick, if we shoot a 400 pounder, it's a monster.
That's a big one, yeah.
Yeah, that's a cub out in BC. That's pretty much our big game species, right?
Right. And then we've got, of course, all the bird, bird stuff.
And actually, if you go up north, we have the muskox. That's another big game species that we have.
And the polar bear, right?
Yep. Yeah, good luck trying to shoot one of those. You're going to have to pay like $25,000, but it can be done. But
okay. And seals. Where do you get tags for seal hunting?
Well, if you're a fisherman, you do.
Oh, that's true. But we have to club them. I was just going to say. We can't shoot them, but we can beat them to death with a stick.
We've got migratory waterfowl. We've got upland.
Yeah,
different
and then,
parts
of course,
the country
all those.
We don't have a wild pheasant season here, but there are game farms where you can hunt pheasant in New Brunswick.
Yeah,
turkeys
same
are
in,
coming
Ontario.
Back to New Brunswick.
Yeah, turkey hunting is. Yeah, turkey hunting is going to be. I can't wait for that to hit New Brunswick again.
I think it's a rumor, but someone said that DNR is saying we're 4 years away from a season.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah,
rumor, that total, as well. Total rumor. You heard
See,
that
last year
long?
I heard it was 3 years. So. I was thinking it was 2 years to go. See, in 2 years, I would just grab my shotgun and going.
I'm sure it's happening, sadly.
Unfortunately, yeah, because that just keeps the numbers down, and we want them to come up so we can actually legally hunt them, which would be, yeah.
Yeah, like deer in my zone, in the wildlife management zone.
Yeah.
Five for where I am in the province. There has not been a deer season since 93.
Yep. They got overhunted, and then they're continuing to be hunted, even though the season's closed and the population's not rebounding.
Yeah, if you talk to I forget the wildlife biologist's name. His first name is Rod. I can't remember his last name. He says that we had there was some overhunting, but there was also three real bad winters in a row, and they're criticized for waiting at one season too late to close it. And he thinks if they had closed it a season sooner, we may still have a herd.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And the food is here. The range is here. The territory is here. Now, Owen, maybe you know this, and Matthew, you may know this as well.
I doubt it. I don't know very much.
Someone told me recently that moose carry a parasite that is fatal to deer, and where you have strong moose populations, you often don't have strong deer population. Now, the moose population in the north is crazy. If you go to the St. John River Valley area, Rossay, St. John, Quispam, there are more deer than people and almost no moose.
Yeah,
and the opposite is true in the north. So is there something to that? Have you guys heard that?
I've heard that before, but deer and moose also don't tend to habitate in the same habitat. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep. Hardwood Ridge, yeah.
Yeah. And moose like the swamp. So there's a certain amount of just habitat difference that also could lead to where there's deer, there's not moose, because it's not the habitat for moose.
Right.
So I think it could be a combination of both.
But growing growing up in this area, moose were so rare that if you got a tag, you had to wait 5 years to apply for another one. And deer were, you just went and bought your license. Now it's the other way around. You can apply for a moose tag every year, but there hasn't been a deer season since 93. That's a long time for a species to bounce back.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. Cool. All right, well, there's some of the species that we have. And then, of course, we've got all our small game to toss in there too, rabbits and you know, upland birds and stuff. But why don't we move into some of our favorite calibers for hunting? And of course, let's talk about the game that we use the calibers for, because when I say 3-03 British, I don't mean for rabbits. Because that'll clean them, but you don't get much meat. So why don't we start with what we have in New Brunswick? Because, I mean, what else can we really talk about? We don't know what we would hunt outside of it. I guess we could kind of speculate as to what calibers we'd use, but let's start at the bottom and work our way up. So what about, you know, upland birds? I don't think it's kind of weird to say 12-gauge shotgun. Anyone? Yeah?
Absolutely. It's, I started with a 20, graduated to a 12. Unsuccessfully tried once with a 22. You were there for that fiasco.
I certainly was. Now, that being said, you are a horrible shot with a 20. No, I'm teasing.
There was one hit for sure, but it didn't get the job done.
It jumped like it was hit. Like, I tell you.
Yeah, it looked like it hit.
And then I stormed off into the woods after it and managed to blow the ears off a rabbit.
Oh, the rabbit, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I got that. That's a rabbit. That's not a grouse at all.
So, yeah, definitely 12 gauge all around for me as well, for both hare and grouse.
I think so. I mean, I think the only time I don't have a problem with people using a 22 out going after hares or even grouse.
After a hare before I go after a grouse.
I would agree with you, because grouse tend to fly and rabbits do tend to run. So a 22 or a shotgun is going to obviously be better on running rabbits than a 22 will be, but you can stock hunt rabbits to the point where they will just sit still and you can shoot them in the head with a 22.
That's what I was gonna say. They have this brilliant strategy where they think if they stop moving, they're invisible.
That's right, which doesn't generally work out well for them, especially if it hasn't snowed yet and they've turned white.
Yep.
So, 22 for rabbits, shotguns also. Now, some people say, well, a 410 is a great bird gun. Well, if you're within 25 yards, it is, I would say.
Or
chickadees, I guess. Yeah, it depends what you mean by bird.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
not a game bird.
You can do it. Now, I would see, this is what I have an issue with, is fathers getting their sons 410s thinking that that'll be a great shotgun to start with. Well, it's a great shotgun to start with to teach them how to shoot a shotgun, but not to hunt with, I think, because the spread is so narrow, it is so hard to hit birds. Go ahead.
I think that's the logic. They know it's not going to be the most useful hunting tool, but it will get them going and shooting.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you got to give the 4-year-old something.
Sure, but the 4-year-old.
Hey, my four-year-old shot a 12-gauge, so
yeah,
they can handle a 20 minimum.
But yeah, so I was just gonna say, 12 years old is really that's the minimum age for children to be hunting on their own permit. So if they're gonna carry a gun in the woods, I think any 12-year-old should be able to handle a 20-gauge. Yeah, I would say with no problem.
Yeah.
And I think a 20-gauge is going to do them a world of good, especially over a 410.
Yeah.
If you're going to carry a 410, that's fine, but I would limit your shots to headshots on grouse on the ground. Use it like a 22. Don't try to get birds on the wing with it, because it's going to be way too difficult.
It's hard enough for the best of times.
It certainly can be, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's birds and rabbits, I guess. What about white-tailed deer? Because that's what we have around here. White-tail aren't terribly huge. The law in New Brunswick says anything centerfire is good to go.
Matthew, you want to do varmints and work our way up?
Yeah, sure. Let's go varmints. That's a great idea.
Let's get some varmints out of the way first.
So crows, definitely 3 out of 3 for crows.
Yeah.
Kidding.
I've seen Owen successfully harvest one with a 12-gauge.
Yeah, crows are, 12-gauge with a full choke.
I've dropped one.
I wouldn't use less than a 12-gauge.
Well, I dropped one from 150-plus yards with a 17 HMR out of the top of a tree. That was...
Yeah, but I mean, like, for shotgun.
Oh, yeah, for shotgun, 12-gauge, full choke. Yeah.
I mean, they're
tough.
The plumage on these things, I mean, my God, the pellets will bounce off any distance without a 12-gauge.
We didn't do much this year, but in years past when we were goose hunting, we would, if there wasn't a lot of geese coming in or ducks or anything, we would call in crows, whenever we saw them.
Yep.
See if we could get them in close enough, and very often we could. And so many times we'd pop up out of the blind and shoot, and they would just crumple, and they'd fall about 10 feet in the air and then catch themselves and fly away.
Christ. Wow.
Just amazing. And you think, got it, and you put you bring your gun down off your shoulder, and then all of a sudden the thing's flapping its wings and it's gone. They're so tough.
Yep. Mm. Cool. We also have coyotes around here, so see, the thing is, the biggest caliber we can use would be 22-250.
Yep, which is arguably more overkill for a coyote.
I've killed coyotes with a 22 before.
Exactly,
and some guys say that's not nearly enough gun for a 22. Well, the one I shot went down one shot, no problem. The thing is, you got to know your gun, know your ranges, and, make sure that you know your animal, yeah. So, yeah. 22 is possible, but you really got to be, I was lucky. I stumbled across it walking through the woods. I didn't call it in. I wasn't coyote hunting. I just had my 22 with me, and a coyote came around the corner, and so I basically shot him in the face. But
you did what you were supposed to do.
Yeah. So a 22 will kill a coyote, but if you're going dedicated to coyote hunting, I would think 223, 17, not 17 HMR, but 17.
Oh no, 17 HMR gets it done. I've got a buddy that's all he hunts with them exclusively.
Okay, cool.
And it's got I know it's small, but it's so much kinetic energy.
Again, know your range, right? If you're within, I would say with a 17 HMR, anything within 150 yards, I would say it'd be no problem.
Exactly. Don't try and...
That's
no,
right.
No,
save the long shots for the 223s or 22-250s.
Yeah.
204 or 204 Ruger would be a great a great caliber for coyotes.
243
New Brunswick.
Oh, right. Too big.
But if you live in a province where you don't have stupid caliber restrictions, then 243 or even 270 would be fantastic.
We can during big game season, but you're right. During dedicated varmint season, no 243.
That's right.
Yeah.
But for other people who...
You don't hear much about the 222, but it's out there. 220 Swift. Yeah.
Owen has a 222. And in fact, Owen, I had a box of shells for you that my brother brought up at Thanksgiving, and then I don't know where they went. Anyway, whenever I find them, I got a box of 222 shells for you.
Awesome.
Matthew.
That was the round that the 223 developed out of.
That's right. Yep.
Yep. Are you gentlemen familiar with the 220 Swift?
Yep.
Didn't last long.
No.
It was popular, but I guess it was, people claimed it was a barrel burner.
Right.
And
it was the way the shoulder was designed, I think.
Yeah, basically.
They shallowed out the shoulder, I think, and it turned out to work much better. And I think that may have actually ended up being the 222 or something similar like that.
think so. They all were kind of right around the same time.
Mm. Some guys still swear by it. They still reload for it. Yeah.
22 Hornet is another cool little cartridge that varmints would not crumble. Benefit from. Yeah. So that's another neat one. It's again a little obscure. It's kind of old, but it's a neat cartridge if you can get your hands on the ammo and on one of the guns. So. So let's move on to then whitetail deer then, because we have those here.
You forgot groundhogs.
Oh, groundhogs. You shoot groundhogs with anything.
Yeah,
basically anything. Just kill them.
I've shot them with actually only two calibers, an arrow.
That's a caliber, sure.
I've got more groundhogs under my belt with archery tackle than anything else. The other one I dropped was with a 17.
Right. Cool. So now can we go to whitetail?
Do what you want, man.
All right. Whitetail. Like I said before.
Really depends where you are.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's focus on New Brunswick.
Yeah, if we're in New Brunswick, then you don't really need anything other than a really good bullet.
Yeah, basically. I mean, even a 223 is going to drop a deer around here. And in fact, I know they will. Jason Gallen dropped one. Oh, no, that was a bear he shot, wasn't it?
A bear, yeah, with his XCR. Yeah.
But, I mean, if you can take a bear, you can totally take a whitetail, I would imagine.
I wouldn't. I'm sure it's possible, but I just personally feel it's a little too light. I would go...
four times the gun.
Yeah, my personal, I wouldn't.
I don't care if I lose a coyote or injure a coyote, but if I want to put that deer on the ground as quickly as possible and make sure I don't lose the meat. So there's other options, you know. If I can just go to a 308, rather. I'm not saying a 223 won't do the job. I'm saying myself personally, I would go minimum 308 or an arrow.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, you're entitled to your opinion. I would say that a 223 is going to work just fine, especially if you're, you know, around. I mean, if your choices are a 12-gauge slug or a 223, I would say go with your 223. You're going to get more accurate shot. You're going to have longer distance to work with, and you're going to, I mean, I think it's going to do just fine, especially if you go with a 77-grain bullet. I think there's, you know, with the expansion available with the newer hunting tech or the expansion technology that we have for hunting bullets now, I think you'd have no problem with a 223.
I don't know if you can get a decent 77 grain hunting bullet. I mean, they're generally long distance target bullets. I don't know if I've seen
hunting bullets at 77 grain.
I've seen 69.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a very common thing.
I don't know, with the right setup. I think your slugs are going to be pretty darn accurate, even.
Yeah, I was thinking. Yeah, 12, but I'm thinking the typical rifled barrel.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking the typical New Brunswick hunter who has an 840 Cooey 840, you know, single shot 12 gauge, you know.
Yeah, but they're not slugs using that anyway. They go deer hunting with a 30-06 or a 300 Win Mag.
Right, yeah. Which I think is overkill. which is something. Overkill. Yeah, oh, that's too much.
That's the only deer I've harvested with a rifle was shot at 88 yards with a 300 Win Mag. It was a 150-pound doe.
The only half deer that you harvested, you mean?
No, it was all there. Yeah, I hit her just behind the shoulder, knocked her off her feet. She landed on her back. She ran 15 yards, piled up. It was 115-grain Remington factory ammunition. The bullet was in the hide on the opposite side. It broke five ribs across on the side it impacted and stuck in the hide. So there's no overkill there. It did what it was supposed to. I mean, I couldn't believe she got up and ran. Couldn't believe it. I just hit her with a 300 Win Mag and she got up and ran. So
yeah, but that's
a story about...
They'll do that with anything. Unless you spine shoot them, they'll pretty much do that with anything you shoot them with. Just
right, but the argument that it's overkill, that I harvested half a deer, I blew off a shoulder, wasn't my experience.
I think the thing where I go with the reason why I think that larger calibers are overkill, I think it's because I see so many people get a bigger gun and a bigger caliber and think that because it's bigger they don't have to be nearly as accurate or practice.
There's actually something to that.
Yeah, so I would almost say it's better to use something more, you know, more traditionally suited, which would be like a 3030 or 32 special or a 308, and then just get out there and practice and be able to hit what you're aiming at instead of spending money on a new rifle and $5 a shot ammunition.
Problem is,
when you're still just going to point shoot anyway and still miss the darn thing.
There's more guys out there than there are guys that practice. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Well, and this there's 3 bullets a year max, right? Yeah. They're the man, it's a nightmare, but
well, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is they think that being a good shot is equipment dependent.
Yeah.
I saw that all the time in sword fighting. People would show up with a new sword or a new weapon that was somehow going to make them, you know, the uber of sword fighting.
Yep, new gear syndrome.
And I still handed their butt to them with my same old weapons that I always used. You know, is skill, not weapon. The other thing is some of those bigger calibers, and I see this and hear about this a lot, guys are scared of them.
They're flinching bad.
They hurt so bad because they're not either not practice shooting it or they're just plain scared of it because maybe they're not big guys, you know, what it, I mean, there could be a lot of reasons, but they just get scared of those big, heavy kicking calibers and they're not good shots because they don't want to practice because it hurts.
Yeah.
Or you know? They actually get somebody else sighting the rifle for them. We see that all the time. Buddy's showing up at the range with 4 different rifles. What are you doing? I'm sighting in all these guys' rifles for them. They're paying me $40 a rifle.
The local gun shop does that too, and it drives me nuts. I mean, if you can't be bothered enough to sight in your own rifle, I almost said line up. That's what they call it around here. Mining in my new rifle. Oh, you know, you're sighting it in.
Woodstock. They don't sight in their bow. They line it in.
That's not even a word. So. Anyway, I guess we're going to finish off with this little bit of advice, and then a hunting story from each of us. Then we're going to get into listener feedback because we're at an hour already. I guess our advice is if you're going to go hunting, get the gun that you're going to hunt with and practice. Yep. Practice from, don't just bench rest and practice that way. Practice the way you're going to hunt in the field. Sit awkwardly, sit funny, sit sideways, lay down, lean around a tree.
Wear your hunting clothes. Wear gloves if you're going to shoot with gloves.
Shoot the way you're going to shoot and make sure you can make the shot.
I hunt big game generally with either a shotgun or a 30-30, usually a 30-30, if I'm stand hunting especially or hunting deer. And I put 160 rounds through that rifle before I ever went hunting with it.
Yeah.
Nice. And that doesn't sound like a lot because, you know, we blow through a couple hundred rounds through our pistols in a match.
We're
talking a 30-30. I bought, you know, in boxes of 20 over the course of a summer. I bought 160 rounds of 30-30 and put it through that gun until I knew the very first time I picked the gun up after, you know, like in an evening, cold, I could pick the gun up and I could put the bullet in a, you know, in a 6-inch plate or a 4-inch plate every time.
Right.
And that's
what you got to be able to do.
Yeah. Because if you shoot if you shoot half a box of ammo and then you're putting it where you want, that doesn't do you any good.
Once your barrel's hot.
You've got to be able. Well, just if you're shooting and getting used to it, you have to be able to pick it up and know that gun to the point of putting the sights at that range, pulling the trigger, and knowing the bullet's going to go there. Otherwise, you're not going to be – even if you find the animal and you get a shot at the animal, your chances of success are lower that you're going to actually harvest that animal cleanly.
Yep.
You know?
So, cool.
Anyway.
All right. Well, let's each go around here and favorite hunting story from your hunting career. Trevor, you got one?
Probably the first black bear that I harvested with an arrow because it was the first archery hunt. It was the first large game hunt. And I tell you, there's this whole different feeling and adrenaline rush when you're aiming at something with an arrow that could eat you. So, the first time I shot a big game and first time I shot big game with an arrow – I still have yet to harvest a bear with anything other than archery tackle, and I'm going deer hunting in November, and I don't know. I'm bringing a crossbow and a 30-30, and I'll decide when I get there what the setup looks like, and I kind of want to do it with a crossbow because I already shot one with a rifle. But so definitely my absolute favorite is my first black bear with an arrow.
Cool. Owen?
Well, I'm really torn because I've got two.
Well, obviously, if they're quick, go ahead. I've got two.
Yeah, I mean, my first bear obviously was a, you know, kind of a highlight for me. It was my first big game, and I shot it about 30 yards, and it came in and walked in like it owned the place, and when it left, it was on the run, and I shot it kind of slightly on the run. It was starting to take off as I shot it through some bushes, so that was kind of cool, and it was a big bear as well. But probably I'm going to have to say my favorite hunt was this year waterfowling, mostly because I shot very well, and it's always a very satisfactory feeling, you know, when you shoot well. Satisfactory feeling, whatever.
I think they both work.
Yeah, we had a, you know, set up where we had piles of birds coming in and lots of decoys. We had set up just almost exactly right. We made a couple changes after the first two groups came in, and the birds were just flying right into our faces. And every time we were popping up, every guy was shooting a couple birds. I shot three triples and two doubles. So basically, I come up and I was taking down a shot with, or a bird with every shot.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was a lot of fun. So we had a big stack of birds by the end of it. We had four guys hunting. So yeah, so that hunt that we did in late September was probably a highlight for me so far.
Very good. Well, very for me, cool. It's got to be the first one would be got to be the turkey? Turkeys.
Yeah,
got to be the turkeys.
I knew it.
It's the first time I went turkey hunting, and it was the first season I went turkey hunting, not the first time. It was actually the second time out, and it was just we were done. The day was over. We were like, we didn't see anything. We were discouraged. We're like, screw it, let's go home. And we saw this field, and we're like, let's just check. We'll just drive up to the edge of the woods in this field and just kind of, you know, just see. And we didn't even turn the car off. And AJ, my buddy, hunting buddy back in Ontario, he just had this stupid little box collar. And he just leaned out as a joke, you know, more than anything, and just went, with the box collar, and the whole woods just exploded with gobbles. We looked at each other. Our eyes must have been the size of dinner plates. I jumped out. He popped the hood. I grabbed a shotgun. We didn't even have a chance to put our camo on. We just grabbed our guns. I threw a shell in. We tore off into the woods. I mean, it was the quintessential opposite of how you hunt turkeys. We were not quiet. There was a car running in the background. There were doors slamming and trunks going. And, you know, we weren't hiding properly. It was just, we ran into the woods, and there were these turkeys everywhere. It was crazy. And I saw one that I wanted to get, and he had just wandered out behind a bush and wandered back out of my sight. And I motioned for AJ to do the box call again, and he did. And this beautiful turkey walked right out into my line of sight. I pulled the trigger, and another one stepped in front of the bullet. And it was a 12-gauge, 3-inch Magnum. The shots, it was number 6 shot. It was $5 a shot for these shells. It was an expensive box of ammo. But it was worth it because it took both those birds down. They both went down with one shot. It was just absolutely perfect timing, which of course was horrifying because we're only allowed to shoot one turkey per day in Ontario at the time. So we were kind of scrambling as to what to do afterwards. But a quick call to the conservation office sorted it out for us with no penalties or anything. So, but man, yeah, that was quite the adrenaline rush. It was really, really cool. And I guess my other one was actually last year, and it was with Trevor and Matt. We were out grouse hunting, and Matt and Trevor saw one. I tore off up into the woods, and then they flushed another one, and they kind of yelled, "It's coming right at you!" And there was this opening, like maybe 20 yards across. It wasn't very big, and I saw this brown blur flying through the woods, and I just snapped up the shotgun and pulled the trigger, and that bird came flying right out of the air to hit the ground.
Into a tree.
Right in, yeah. So that's got to be my...
It was definitely one of the coolest hunting moments I've ever seen. I mean, you had a split second to react, and you knocked that thing out of the air. Not with, you know, a 28-inch barrel with a full choke.
No. It was a 20-inch barrel. It's my 3-gun shotgun is what I use. I use that shotgun for everything. It's a 20-inch barrel vent rib with bead on it, you know, just a Mossberg 500, and it's very light. I love it for out in the woods. But, yeah, anyway, I guess those are our hunting stories. I guess we're into some listener feedback.
All right.
So, Trevor, you want to take this full one? Sure. This first one? I can't speak tonight.
This one comes to us from Mike, and he says, hello, all. Hopefully.
Hey, you're right. He's actually here.
I've been gone for a while and just got... and I just caught up on all your episodes, including your CCW episode. I emailed you about the history of CCW, and in the mix of trying to answer my questions, I figured out how I should have phrased the question. What event occurred in the United States to create the "we have to do something" attitude, in air quotes, that led to CCW licensing? I am off the mark again. If I'm off the mark again, I'm sorry. Thanks, and keep up the good work, Mike. So
you weren't off the mark the first time, Mike. We just are horrible at answering questions. So and to answer you, use a 12-gauge for sure, and the bird will never know what hit it. All right, next one.
So as far as I know about this, just basically listening to American podcast, did this not start with a female in Florida?
No, actually, from what I gathered, I did a little bit of research. I believe Georgia was the first state to bring in CCW, and it was just because there was no lead up to it. They just decided, well, we have the right to carry guns. Why aren't we? And so the governor put the law in the books, and it was a pro-gun governor and a pro-gun Senate, I guess, or pro-gun voters or whatever, and it went through. And it just kind of did it because basically they were bored, I think.
They could.
They could. What I think kind of started the firestorm, though, that really helped CCW take off, I believe, was in Texas with Susanna Hupp. She was involved in a shooting.
I thought she was in Florida.
She may have been, but she is a Texan, is what I understand, because I'm 99% sure she is a Texan, and it may have taken place in Florida, but she is a Texan. She was at a diner with her parents. A gunman came in. She had a gun in her truck, but she wasn't legally allowed to carry it on her person.
Yes, and her father got murdered, yeah.
And her mother. They both were killed. Her father was shot. Her mother went over to help him, and the guy shot her, too. And so she basically went before the United States Congress, I guess, or maybe it was, I think that's what it was at one point anyway, and basically saying, listen, we have the right to bear arms. Why are we not? Why did I not have the right to have my gun on me? And my parents are dead because you guys wouldn't let me carry a gun, basically is what it boiled down to. And that's kind of what, everybody took notice at that point. It became a national story. And I think that's kind of what kicked it all off.
I think you had that, and you also had about that same time, if I remember correctly, Florida, or maybe this was a little after, but Florida enacting, because of all the crime problems in the big cities like Miami and Tampa and stuff like that, enacting castle law. Mm-hmm. And so people had this idea that their home is their castle, and I think that played a part as well, because I think that was all around the same time. Or maybe that was a little bit after this, but...
And now...
people carry in their houses and protect their houses, and then they want to know, well, why can't I carry all the time? What about my car? What about, when I'm at the mall?
In the States, your car, I believe most states anyway, yes, your car is regarded as your residence dwelling. As well, yep, your dwelling. So you can have a loaded gun in your car, and people were like, well, I can defend myself in my car, but if I'm in the mall, it kind of sucks. Yep. So...
Yep. Yeah. And it is also a state... Yeah, it's a state thing, right? So it's not federal, not as much federal, like as it is in Canada, where it's completely federal, more or less.
Yeah,
but in the States, that's all run by the state. So, yep.
Very good. All right. Well, I hope that answers your question. Like I said, news number 6 shot for sure, and you'll be fine.
Definitely 42.
Definitely 42. Definitely.
That's what we'll do from now on. Whenever somebody asks us a question, 42. Instead of doing what we just did, making stuff up, we'll just say 42 and move on.
That's right. That's the answer to life, the universe, everything.
And everything, yep.
Everything. So, Owen, bring us this next one.
This is from Ping Pong.
I'm sorry, Ping Pong. That's what your email address says. I don't know what your real name is because you didn't sign your email properly. So you're Ping Pong for this show.
Yep. Makes sense. He says, hey, fun boys. So I'm a little nervous about this email already.
A little bit.
listening to the complaining about the MagFed version of the Grizz two shows in a row now. I guess I just got lucky with mine. No feeding issues here. I have two mags, and if they weren't $35 a piece, I'd buy more. Oh. Don't tell the CFO.
That's cheap, buddy. That's cheap.
Yeah, I'd buy more.
Try buying STI mags.
Don't tell the CFO, but I put a folding stock with pistol grip on it, and it's pretty badass.
Oh, using my anonymous email account here. Oh, that makes more sense.
That's why his name is Ping Pong.
All right, Ping Pong.
I also have a Mossberg 535 12 gauge, and my friend has the Remington 870, and mine feeds ejects better. Also interested in a T-shirt, extra large sized. Let me know when you have enough for a run, and I can send some moolah and address. Regards, I'm not Ron Burgundy.
That's funny.
Darn right you're not.
That's right. Well, first of all, I'd tell you to go ahead and put your full-size stock back on your gun, because that's illegal. You don't want to get caught with that. I've heard that. Now, the Grizz, the MagFed, I've heard that it's chambered for 3-inch, and if you run 3-inch, those are the ones that give you the hang-ups and the problems, but the 2 3/4 run just fine. So you may just be running 2 3/4 to yours, and that's fine. You know, I'm glad you're having good luck with it, because it is a neat-looking gun, and you know, they'd be great for quadding, like four-wheeling, because you can just grab your shotgun and throw the mag in, and you're loaded. You don't have to stick one round at a time in the gun, but yeah. Cool. Also, that your Mossberg is better than your Remington. Well, yeah, duh.
Am I not surprised?
That's Trevor, cool.
Trevor, what shotgun did you run during the match?
A Mossberg.
Yeah.
Ask me what shotgun I'm buying next year.
You're buying that Benelli thing, or no? What is it?
26-inch Versamax chambered in 3.5-inch.
Versamax. Why? That's right. Because you can run 9 rounds in it legally.
Right. If you buy the tactical, it's only chambered in 3-inch. If you buy the 26-inch, it's chambered in 3.5. Put a +2 on there, and you're not exceeding the maximum allowed capacity of 5 3.5-inch shells.
Yeah, 5 3.5 translates to
7.
7 2 3/4 with one ghost load and one of the chamber makes 9.
You got it. It's a lot of barrel for 3-gun, but it's a lot of semi-automatic capacity.
That's true. That's true. All right. This next one comes to us from Mike. This must be another Mike from our first email. But anyway, he goes, "Hey, guys. After hearing last week's episode, I finally realized why I never heard back from Trevor on grabbing one of those three-lash T-shirts. I guess I just assumed a squirrel ran by, he saw a rock, and forgot."
Yeah, you're right both times.
He says he's just kidding, but he's not. I got no problems waiting for the next run of T-shirts. Keep me on the waiting list. As for the training weekend that you want to organize with Tactical Tommy next year, admin did a list. I would definitely make the drive to New Brunswick for that, seeing as I'm in the same boat as your listener, Craig, from last week, driving out from Ontario. If you guys could turn it into a full weekend event with the addition of an IDPA or IPSC match the day after Tommy's instruction, it would be extra incentive, and not to mention, just plain awesome. You also have another vote for the August long weekend. One less day of vacation I need to book off will make it that much easier to get the time off. Anyway, keep up the good work. Good luck at the 3-gun match. I wish I could be there. Cheers from Mike. Well, thanks for the good luck. It worked because we all won. Well, I won, and the other two came in second and third first place losers. But
hey, I'm second place loser, man.
That's right. Owen's first place loser, so that's right. Cool.
Yeah.
The training with Tactical Tom, and we do have other emails indicating, I think at least three others indicating that there is some interest there, so that's good. Please keep sending those emails in. We have one guy from Winnipeg who's looking for somebody who wants to carpool with him, so get a hold of us and we'll put you in contact with him if you want to drive across the country with some random guy who owns guns. That'll be fun. As for doing a match after Tommy's instruction, I think we decided that wouldn't be feasible, but there would be, it would be a two-day event, no?
No, that was feasible.
Well, it was feasible.
Yeah, the beauty of this whole arrangement is SummerSlam is over.
Oh, okay.
So we will spend Saturday doing the training and Sunday running a quick short IPSC match using the stages left over from SummerSlam.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, we can do that. Sure, yeah. We're in.
This is why it's feasible. If we had to build all the stages, might be tough, but since the stages are going to be up, just like they were left over for the three gun, we'll have them left over and waiting for us to run a mini match using the SummerSlam stages.
Very good. Okay, well, that'll work then.
Yeah, won't be there on the Sunday, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if it was on a long weekend, Friday, Saturday, instead of Saturday, Sunday.
Well, I believe Friday is the holiday. What's the first of August?
Could we do a Friday, Saturday instead of Saturday, Sunday?
I don't think so. It all depends on when Tommy's flight gets in, and a lot of people still have to work the Friday. And because I imagine we're going to have a chunk of people sign up from locally that are going to...
It's just a New Brunswick holiday.
Oh. Yeah.
Not a holiday anywhere else.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate.
Well, no, some places call it Family Day, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. August 1st is a holiday in different provinces, just called different things.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that.
Well, still, even if you're not able to make the Sunday, any listeners, including myself and Owen probably, the training on Saturday is going to be worth it anyway. So,
Yeah,
if you can stay for Sunday, obviously stay and do the match too, because that'll be a lot of fun.
So I'm envisioning that your entry fee for this course is going to include your match. So you'll get the course on Saturday.
And then the match on Sunday.
And then the match on Sunday, yeah.
Well, thanks for clearing that up, because I wasn't sure.
Now you are.
All right. Bring us this next one from Mark. This one,
yeah. So Mark says, hey, Matt, Trevor, and Owen.
I'm on the podcast now.
Yay!
You guys put on a great show. I was wondering if Trevor could briefly, discuss how he changes out his Dillon 650 breast.
Oh, come on, not again.
When he goes from small to large pistol primers, when he goes from small to large primers, if he does. My press is set for 5.56, and I am about to switch it over to 45 ACP, but I'm a little intimidated by all the parts.
Probably because you have a 1911 and they have too many parts. I understand. Yeah.
I don't want to mess it up. Any suggestions? Before I go on to this next part of his email, I'm gonna answer this real quick. I need you to go to both the internet and YouTube and look up a
both
site.
Both the internet and the YouTube. Don't just go to YouTube. You've got to go to the internet too.
Look up on YouTube a guy by the name of Gavin Tube, and he has incredible high definition videos showing how to run the Dillon 650, how to change the calibers and switch over the caliber conversion kits. His blog or internet website is called ultimatereloader.com. So check him out on the internet and YouTube, because Matthew's a dink.
Well, and you kind of have to go on the internet to go on the YouTube.
Yeah, well, I meant go to his website and go to his YouTube page or his YouTube channel. So it's Gavin Tube on YouTube and ultimatereloader.com. He's the reason why I bought a 650. Don't worry about it. It takes 10 minutes to do a caliber conversion change on the 650. It's a piece of cake. Next part of his email says, I just had another quick question. What do you use to record your podcasts when you have everyone in different places?
It's a tin can with a spring.
I enjoy the show and hope to cross paths someday. Mark in Atlanta.
So what we do is we plan like when we're going to get together to record, and then we record all the shows ahead, speaking about the things, what we're going to do in the future as if it was in the past. It's a very tricky system. You know, it's very complicated. But that's why we're not going along
and have time for lame jokes.
Oh, no, lame jokes are the best kind. Basically, we write out a script, and then we each just record ourselves, and I splice it all together.
Exactly.
It's called Skype. It's called Skype.
We just use Skype. You get a program called CallBurner. You buy a license for it, and it lets you record Skype conversations. It's basically what we do. We use CallBurner and Skype, and then free editing software that I downloaded off the interweb. And that's it. It's actually not terribly difficult. Even I could figure it out.
Yeah, Brian did.
Brian did, yeah. Trevor hasn't yet, but he's working on it.
You're both right. Both accounts.
Very good. Okay, this next one comes to us from Archie Perry. I'm going to play his audio because that's what he does.
Thank you for that.
Hello, Slamfire Radio. This is your old friend, Archie Perry. Excuse me while I eat some carrots. I got a few things that written down in my notebook I thought I'd share with you. Number one, I liked you on Facebook due to the constant nagging.
You're welcome.
Having said that, I think you guys have stopped nagging, but you got me to do it. Maybe you should keep nagging. Number two, I just bought a house, and I thought I would be really excited about that, but buying a house was overshadowed by the fact that I bought myself a 1911. Number three, I bought a Sig Sauer 1911. It's pretty sweet. I don't know why you guys are always hating on 1911s. I don't own a Glock, but why would I? I have a 1911. I don't need a Glock. So far, I've managed a 1.5-inch group at about 7 meters. It's pretty good for me, considering I'm a rookie. I should say it's a 1911-22, which means that there is no recoil. So it's not really it's not a real gun, but it's good for practicing and learning, I guess. It's a full-size 1911, so when I get a real 1911, I won't have to relearn how to hold it. But it's definitely a pea shooter, as they say. Oh, yeah, and I shot 300 rounds, and I had a couple of failed to ejects. It never failed to fire, but it failed to eject. And not that it failed to eject, but the casing would eject out of the chamber, but then it would get caught by the slide as the slide closed, and that would jam the whole thing up. I'd have to take the mag out, clear it, make sure it's empty, and then put it all back together. I figured out that my thumb was touching the slide, which was causing it to be too slow or too fast on the eject something. And when I repositioned my thumb, it no longer did that. I'll give you an update on my hunting season. I'm in Fort McMurray, and we have about 2 weeks of spring jacket or fall jacket weather. And that's come and gone, so now it's winter jacket time already. And I actually haven't been out hunting. Well, I've been out twice, but I wouldn't really call it hunting. I didn't try very hard. I just sort of walked around and shot my gun off. That's why I'm eating carrots. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about, for those of us who don't know, you could tell us about a Glock and why a Glock is better than a 1911, rather than just all the hyperboil that you are constantly spewing. But if you don't want to, that's fine too. I know a 1911 is good. Talk to you later. Archie Perry.
Oh man, that was good.
Thank you. Eating?
I don't know. I don't know. It's funny though.
Yeah.
Where do we start? Didn't go hunting, so I'm eating a carrot. Well, that's right. You know what they call vegetarians? It's the Indian word for bad hunter. So yeah. Eat a carrot. It's hyperbole. Yeah.
No, not hyperbole.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure he knew that. He's just messing. But yeah, that was funny. Yeah, why are Glocks better?
Yeah.
They don't break or jam.
They don't break or jam as nearly as much.
They have no parts in them.
They have no parts.
You know what,
They're completely made out of plastic and ceramic, so you can take them through a metal detector at an airport, and they're worth your month's salary.
Three months' salary, yeah.
Basically, the Glock 7's the best gun ever.
So, I you know, the parts count thing, now that I own a 2011 or a 1911 type clone, like a 2011, the parts count in my 2011 is much, and it's almost identical to the parts count in a 1911. My frame's in two pieces, so that's a little extra, but the parts count, gentlemen, is a lot lower, and the actual overall design is a lot simpler than we gave the platform credit for. I will say that.
That's because you're biased these days.
Well, no, that being
nothing
said.
Nothing you say matters at this point.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows that you've been soiled. You know, actually, you've soiled yourself.
Gentlemen, like I've said before, I'll play with a 2011 or a 1911, but I'll trust my life to a Glock.
All right.
If ever I get to go back to Utah and open carry, I don't know if you guys heard that or not, but I
did. You open carry in Utah?
Just that one time. Yeah, I don't like to brag, but
you, right. And here we thought you were your friends, and you never told us this.
It's just not that big of a deal, you know. I mean, Canadians open carry all the time. No, so Archie, are they better? They're different. That's the right answer.
The better answer is yes, they are better.
That's the better answer. No, that's not true. They are different. They do different things, and they do those different things fairly well. The Glock does what it does awesome, and the 1911 does what it does okay.
Yeah.
It's mediocre at best, really.
Yeah. Like, I mean, a 1911 for a high-end competition gun, I prefer. A Glock for a carry gun, I prefer.
Yep. Yeah, because, you know, a 1911 needs a lot more, you know.
TLC.
TLC, oh. Yeah.
Does listen, I can't go more than 200 rounds without cleaning my 2011.
Yeah. So.
And it tells me when it's dirty. It starts to act up.
Yeah.
The slide won't lock open.
Well, when you got the tolerances like you have on that, that makes sense. I mean, when you add dirt and carbon and stuff and fouling into the thing, it's going to start slowing down and stuff. So that makes sense. But so anyway,
the Glock is better depending on what you want it for.
Sure.
How's that?
That's right. And the 1911 is always going to be just pretty good.
I have no problem with that. I can totally get behind that answer.
That's funny. All right, this last one comes to us from Phil Thee. This is the storm cloner. What does he call himself?
He's a clone.
Hi guys, I think with this email you've reached your filthy quota for the year. I wanted we haven't
enough.
We are filthy enough, but continue to write in, Filthy. We like hearing from you. Yeah, Squirrel, go. I saw a rock.
While you read Filthy's email, I'm finishing Filthy's bottle of Jameson that he left here.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Just saying. Thanks, Filthy.
I wanted to write in to tell your listeners something I should have mentioned on the post-shoot episode instead of bayonet charges. If there are any of you guys who have been thinking of shooting an IPSC service rifle, CQB, or any other shooting competition, but you've been holding off for all the usual bad reasons, you've got to get off your butts and do it. I went to the 3-gun with zero experience, and I'll admit I was a little nervous, but it was the most fun I've ever had shooting in my life. I made lots of mistakes. For instance, I had so many AR mags on me, I was still finding them in pockets after I got back to my hotel room in Campbellton. I also just couldn't wrap my mind around the fact I could fire extra shots at targets, that they only counted the best two. So my round count was needlessly low, and I didn't do follow-up shots at targets that I thought I might have missed. My shotgun was plugged to 3 rounds. I missed targets, I forgot to shoot targets, but it was still the best day of shooting I ever had. I feel like I finally shot my pistol and AR the way they're supposed to be used. I also have to say, all the guys in the squad I shot with were really great to me. Oh, and the Slamfire hosts are just as friendly, handsome, and excellent shots as they want you to imagine they are. Yes, we'll get that free t-shirt to you right away, Filthy.
So, Matt, you're friendly, I'm handsome, and Trevor's the excellent shot?
Well, except that he came in third, so no. Thanks so much for inviting me, Trevor.
Well, we know he's not friendly, but anyway.
I am too friendly. Shut it. Keep reading, Matt.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Trevor. I think it's going to be hard to go back to weekend plinking after the 3-gun match. Oh, and before I forget, Matt and Owen, I've invited myself to Woodstock for a 22 AR shoot. I'll let you guys work out the details. The Empire rocks. Filthy. Very good. We will definitely take you up on that offer. That's one that a lot of guys do have trouble with at first, is the shooting extra shots at targets. Some competitions, you're only allowed to shoot so many shots at each target. You shoot two at this, shoot two at that, you know. But, in IPSC, shoot as many as you want. The best two count. So,
I'm glad we got rid of that silly rule.
Yeah, count?
Yeah, it was not practical.
No. No, shoot as many as you want, and the best two count. So,
shooting more shots, the con side to it is built in with it takes more time.
That's right. But if you've missed it, it makes more sense to take the time and get your points, because it very rarely is minus 30 better than 1 second.
Right. Prime example is you and I, Matthew. You were my RO at the back of the bus. And
we were all back of the bus.
No, he was thinking short bus. We all arrived on a short bus. At the bottom of the bus stage, where there was 5 pistol targets, I shot them all, and I was finished. And before you said, if you're finished and load and show clear, I dropped my mag. And then all of a sudden, I look at the target, and there's It was above a penalty target, and I had one in the alpha and then a Mike. And I just quickly reached ahead with the one round left in the gun, even though the mag was out. I had a round in the chamber and popped it in there.
Yep, and that saved. I mean, that took you know, that was another couple of seconds onto your time, but that prevented you from being minus 20 points.
Exactly,
you were only minus 10 at that point because you hit the penalty.
Yeah. So, no, I didn't hit the penalty.
Oh,
no,
you
I
had just missed it. Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay,
so
gotcha.
I just would have been minus 10, right?
Yep, yep, would have been minus 10, and 20 is much better than minus 10.
Yeah.
So, cool, cool. All right. So yeah, seriously, Filthy's right. If you haven't shot competition and you're scared because you've never done it before, well, you're never going to go and do it because you've never done it before. See, that logic doesn't make sense. Just get out there and do it. It's fun.
You don't know what you don't know.
You don't even know what I don't know. Oh, no, you know what I don't know. I don't know nothing.
What you don't know could fill a truck.
What? Wait. Thank you?
You're nuts. So the point is, guys, I'm Ron Burgundy, and you should shoot competition.
That's right. Okay, so best iTunes review this week, we didn't get one. So you guys, don't even get off your butts and go shoot a three gun. Get off your butts and go leave us a review on iTunes, because that'd be super cool. Speaking of iTunes, don't forget to join the CSSA and the NFA, because that has nothing to do with iTunes, but you should go join them because they're the only way we're going to keep our gun rights here in Canada.
Both shout-outs comes before this.
Oh, yeah, I missed the shout-outs. All right, bring us
follow
a shout-out,
your
Trevor.
Own notes.
No, I can't read.
Okay. The shout-out is from Neopotion 762. Is that pronounced correctly?
Yeah, that's as far as I got with it.
All right. So Neopotion 762 sent us a Ron Burgundy ice cream pitcher. And the ice cream flavor in question was Scotchy Scotch Scotch. By Häagen-Dazs or Ben & Jerry? I think it was Ben & Jerry's Scotchy Scotch Scotch. Works all the time, 50% of the time.
I love that quote. 50% of the time, it works every time.
You have to check out the trailer for Anchorman 2.
I don't have to do anything. You can't make me. You're not my real mom.
I wasn't talking to you, and I am your real
whoa, what? So, yeah. So, thank you to Neopotion for sending that in. It was worth a laugh, and it got us talking about Ron Burgundy again. Go so check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada forum, because it's awesome. Like us on Facebook, please. The local library is up 1 from last week to 262 from 261, and we're trailing now by less than 30. We're not up. We're at 236, so we're trailing them by 29.
We're not up from last week?
No, we are definitely up from last week. Definitely.
That's what I said. We're up.
Yeah, we're not up above them, though. The local library still has more. They're at 262. Over we're at 236.
Them, I'll say we beat them.
You're going to get beaten here in a minute. No, wait. That was last weekend.
Well, please,
we beat
can
you.
I do it? Can I do it?
You did. You beat him in the three gun. Sorry,
Trevor. Not much fun beating
not
with
nearly
stick.
As much fun as swords and fists and helmets. All right. Be sure to check out the other great shows on the CRR Network as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. They're both awesome networks, and there's awesome, awesome material on each. So go
if
check them out.
If you could weigh that content, those words, if those words weighed something, I would say there'd be a ton of great material there.
Nice. I like it. That's beautiful metaphor or simile, whichever way you want to go with that.
I'm just going to call it lame.
Well, a ton or really 2,200, because really a kilogram, like metric, I got nothing. I'm broken. What's next? Oh, we're done. All right. Well, rounding out your weekly podcast, Awkward Endings, this is Slamfire Radio.
Catch y'all next week.
Take some of your shooting, guys.
And nobody is Ron Burgundy. Except for Ron Burgundy, of course, who is Ron Burgundy. Okay, check out his new movie. It's cool. All right. That's it. We're done.
Stay classy, San Diego.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over.
time to get a gun.
Yep. Okay, shall we?
Shall we what?
I don't know. Maybe record this podcast thing we do.
Don't tell me what to do.
I was asking.
Yeah, I'm ready when you guys are.
Please.
What?
I told Trevor that he didn't say please.
Oh, say please, yeah, with sugar on top.
Oh, this is going to be a good show, I can tell.
Yeah?
I liked it better when you said you weren't coming.
Oh, no, that's an outtake. All right, so one.